ॐ सहनाभवतु, सहनौ भुनक्तु, सहवीर्यं करवावहै, तेजस्विनावधीतमस्तु मा विद्विषावहै। ॐ शान्ति शान्ति शान्तिः। हरिः ॐ श्रीगुरुभ्यो नमः। हरिः ॐ। Last week we started this chapter 7, which is the beginning of Tat Pada Shodhanam, the discovery of the Tat Pada, which is also the Brahma Pada in Aham Brahmasmi or I Am Atma Brahma, Pradhyanam Brahma. So the Tat from Tattvamasi, Tat from Tattvamasi and Brahma from the other three Mahavakyas, that is what now we are trying to learn about. Because the Jiva, represented by Arjuna, has purified his mind and intellect and is at a stage where he has been instructed into meditation. But the one point that is remaining is what should he meditate upon? Bhagwan said, meditate upon me. But Bhagwan, what is your nature? I need to know so that I can meditate on your nature. So now Bhagwan has started his teaching. And right in the beginning, Bhagwan has told him that he will give him undoubted, asamshayam, undoubted and complete knowledge. Undoubted with regards to the understanding and complete with regards to what is to be understood, the goal, and complete meaning the absolute nature and the immanent nature. So the absolute nature, which is beyond this world, non-dual without a second, whereas the lower nature or the immanent nature is how to see his presence in this world as well. So that is how that knowledge will become complete. We cannot have one without the other. The reason is that we are experiencing the world. And okay, if you only say that, okay, I'll look for God in the world, that is not enough. That is partial knowledge. And partial knowledge must never be considered to be complete knowledge. That partial knowledge about the world, about the God, about God being in the world, will become complete by knowing his absolute nature alone. And therefore, this complete knowledge is required of the higher and the lower natures both. But for this, Bhagwan says, I will tell you, but there are three conditions. So, mai asakta manaha, the mind attached to me, meaning two things. One is that the flow of thought, because mind is the flow of thought, should be towards the divine. Second is, how do I do that? How do I do my work? So in every situation in our life which comes to us, whether it is good, whether it is bad, because both situations are going to come, nobody can say that all the situations that have come to him is bad or all the situations that have come to me are good. So in both situations, we need to bring the presence of the Lord in there. So when good happens, we say, thank you, Lord, it is because of your grace that this has happened. And when sorrow comes, a bad situation comes, we say, oh Lord, I know you have given me this, and I also know that you are going to give me the strength to bear this. So that completes mai asakta manaha. Yogam yunjan, putting forth efforts, knowing fully well that the efforts will only fructify by the grace of God. I told you, if we say, oh, if there's grace of God only, then why should I put efforts? Unless we put in efforts, the grace will not come. Unless I start opening the blinds in my house, the sunlight is not going to come in. And to the extent that I open the blind, if I open them only one fourth, then only one fourth sunlight will come in, that much. Half more, fully more. So depending on our efforts, which have to be in the karma yoga fashion. So when we put in self-effort like that, which is also known as purushartha, knowing at the same time, knowing that the results which I want may or may not come, because that would be the grace of the Lord, then yogam yunjan is fulfilled. And madashaya, taking my support alone, knowing that the means and the goal is one and the same. So the goal is the divine, the Lord. And what are the means? Means are also the Lord. Generally, for us, means and goal are different. And once we reach the goal, we drop the means. But in this case, Bhagwan is saying, I am your goal and I only can help you reach that. So taking his support alone, Okay, so when these three are fulfilled, then Bhagwan says, I will give you undoubted and complete knowledge. So please listen. And the next verse, Bhagwan glorifies the student, the knowledge itself, sorry. So he says, knowing which there remains avashishyatna, there will remain nothing else to be known, knowing which you will know everything in this world. Jnanam te aham, this te word is there. Te means about you. See, people meet, you know, normal people meet. You may have noticed there are, when two people meet, sometimes they're constantly talking about third people, a third person. A and B meet and they're talking about C and D and E. Okay. Then sometimes A and B meet and one of them is only talking about themselves. B only. So A and B meet and B is only talking about B. But the third kind, and which is the highest kind, when A and B meet, then one person will talk about the other person. Like, let's talk about you. How are you feeling? How are you? How are things with you? Not like, okay, I did this and I did that and this. So by doing that, by asking the other person or talking about the other person, we are giving importance to the other person. See, who we are talking about, that means that, suppose if A and B meet and they talk about C and D, then C and D are very important in their mind, right? Why would you talk about unimportant things? So when things about other people become very important, not a good thing. Otherwise, it's self-importance. Just listen to my this thing, what I did, how I achieved this. But when we start listening to the other person, that's what becomes the greatest. And here what Bhagwan is saying is, this knowledge that I am going to tell you is about you. The one thing is, suppose if A and B meet and one person is talking about C and D, that other person may not be interested. I'll tell you this thing. Just a couple of weeks ago, there was a couple that had come here. I'd invited them. They had not been to my house at all. So they came. And then somewhere along the line, they sort of just started, without my asking, talking about Indian politics, which I don't even know anything about Canadian politics, let alone know Indian, right? But they themselves on their own. And I'm like, okay, fine. What can I do, right? They're my guests. They're senior. They're elderly people. I can. So there was a whole exposition on what Narendra Modi has done and what the Congress has done, and Rahul Gandhi and this one and that one. And I'm like, okay. Half things, 99.9% I didn't understand. I did not understand what was going on, right? So then the point is that when they're talking about something in which I have no interest at all, am I going to be listening attentively? Am I going to be interested? Or am I going to say, okay, when is this going to finish now? Because I really don't want to know anything, right? So that's why what Bhagwan is doing here is, listen attentively, Arjuna, I'm going to talk about you. That's the load of that word, te aham, te is about you. So what happens is to the listener is, if I say, listen, I'm going to tell you about yourself. I am important. In the speaker's mind, now I am important, whatever that is, right? So the listener becomes very attentive. And that is the idea here, where Bhagwan is telling him that the knowledge is extremely important. And because knowing which, like, what can be greater than this knowledge? See, every other, you know, Swami Sharda Priyananda had come way back from Chinmayaranam. She's no more. And she said a very beautiful thing. She said, when a person tells me he's a PhD in chemistry, then I say, you are ignorant in like million other subjects, right? Because you're a PhD in chemistry, it means you don't know physics, you don't know mathematics, you know astrology, you know astronomy, you know this, you know thousand other things. That means you're declaring to the world that I am zero in like a million things, and now I have a PhD in one subject. Okay? So, but this knowledge is not like that. This knowledge is, you have a PhD in everything in the world now. That doesn't mean you'd come to know all the subjects, okay? Because you're knowing yourself and you come to know that you are the one that is the substratum for this entire world. What else do you need to know? So the knowledge is glorified, and when the knowledge is glorified and the listener is glorified, the listener is going to be even more attentive than he already was. He was already attentive, but now, oh, about me. And knowing which, nothing remains to be known. Wow, tell me, God. Tell me, O Lord, right? So that's why the second verse glorifies the listener. And I told you about parokshanam. So jnanam, and along with vidnyanam, sa vidnyanam, sa is with, with vijnana. So jnanam here is paroksha jnanam, which is external knowledge dependent on the senses. So whatever I gain through the senses, so I hear or see, touch, etc., etc., is paroksha jnana. But aparoksha jnana is only about myself. There is only one aparoksha jnana in this entire world, and that is I am. That is aparoksha jnana. I don't need anybody else to tell me that I am, because that I know inherently. When I wake up from a deep sleep, when I wake up from a coma, if I'm unconscious, I wake up, I may say, where am I? What happened to me? But I will not say who I am unless I've got dementia. That's a different matter then. Then the upadhi is defective. But generally, I will not say who am I. Where am I comes very often, especially when I'm traveling. Every night I'm in a different room. I'm like, okay, which place am I today, this morning? What am I supposed to do? That had come. But it never came, oh, who am I? You know, I don't have to look in the mirror. That is aparoksha jnana. Except our aparoksha jnana is that we think of the ego. That's a different matter. But here, jnanam and vijnanam, that's what Bhagwan means. I will give you the knowledge, which is paroksha jnana, because when I'm talking to you and you're listening, that's paroksha. But I will also make it so doubt-free and complete that this aparoksha jnana, you will have to get aparoksha jnana. You will have no choice but to have that wisdom. So that's why Bhagwan says, I'm giving you both jnana and vijnana, and listen attentively now. Then in verse 3, which we read last time, Bhagwan glorifies the listener now. There he glorified the knowledge, but here he's glorifying the listener. So he says, Manushyanam Sahasreshu, in Vilchunamani, if you remember, Bhagwan Shankaracharya has said that human birth is extremely rare. Now, we might feel that what does he mean rare? There's the population is increasing billions now, millions has gone billion. China is billions, India is in billion. There's billions of human beings. So how it can be rare? It is rare when you compare it to all the beings in the world. So if you take the animal population, the reptile population, the bird population, the plant population, humans are only 2% of the entire beings that are covering this earth. 2% only. So human birth itself is very rare. And that's why we must always cherish this birth. What we do is, you know, cherishing means we think it's, oh, I let me just enjoy life. It is not that. But we must be cognizant of the fact that we have done something good to get human birth. And now that I have done that good in the past, I don't know what it is, I have got this, let me not waste this chance. This is what Bhagwan Shankaracharya urges. He says, please don't waste this chance, because, and there is some misunderstanding, people think that if I get a human birth, now I'll never go down. That is also absolutely wrong. If you, in your human birth, do things like the animals do, you will come back as an animal. Bhagavad Gita says that. Okay, it's not, I'm not telling you. He will only, in further chapters, it will come. That if you will fall, you will devolve. So therefore, keep your actions very pure. Keep your thoughts very pure, so that you will get an evolved birth. You can go higher, you can go lower. But the point of this going higher, people think I'll do good actions and go to the heavens. The problem there is no liberation from the heavens, and there's no liberation from the animal world. There is only liberation from the human world, from the mortal world. And therefore, even the devas, the celestial beings, they want to be born as mortals. They want to be born as humans, because here is the chance to get liberated once and for all. Because when you go to the heavens, I've told you, you go with a certain amount of merit. When that merit finishes, you need to come back. When your same way, when you devolve, when your demerits finish, and you will come back to mortal world only. So here it's so first of all, the birth itself is extremely rare. Human birth is gotten when your papa and punya is 50% each. And the papa and the punya, what kind of merit and demerit we have accumulated will determine the experience, because you have to understand that sukha, happiness can come from many sources. See, some person might win a lottery. Okay, some person might meet a spiritual guru. Some person might, in dispassion, he'll be most happy. So depending on the type of karma that is done, that type of happiness comes. And also sorrows, depending on the demerits, that type of sorrow, some will have physical ailment, some will have mental ailment, some will have, you know, some people have lot of responsibility, huge family, lot of responsibility, lot of this. Some people have no family, no responsibility, right? So it's everything is all determined. It's all in subtle form, and that is how it is. Anyway, point is that this birth is rare. Now, once we get this birth, meeting of the guru is also much rare, very rare. Now, why is meeting the guru rare? It's because the guru, spiritual gurus itself are very rare. There are many, many spiritual gurus who really do not want to do anything with the world. They don't want to teach. They don't want to. I'm reading a Mananam old. I don't know if Abhimanyu has it. I believe it was printed in 1986. Solitude is the name of that Mananam series. You know how Mananam books have their names. So this one is called Solitude. I found it in my father's collection. In that, there is an article means it is the diary that Gurudev kept when he was traveling at one point in his life, before he became Swami Chinmayananda and to the public, when he was only Chinmayananda, he was traveling barefoot in the Himalayas. And there is an account of all the saints that he met. I read it first time only. And they lived in, like, literally he has given the dimensions. In one room, 6 foot by 12 foot. And then this yogi is sitting there. And somebody's legs are totally swollen because apparently that person has not moved in like 10 years. Some person has not eaten in like 20 years. Some people's eyes are just open in God knows how many. Some people, Maunvrata, everybody, nobody is speaking also. For so many years, it seems they've not spoken. And these, so many he has listed. Like we went from this one to that Baba's hut and that Baba's hut and that Baba's hut. So these are the people who have realized, because how you can stay like that in the cold unless you have realized. But they don't want to teach. They don't want to have disciples. Even Tapon Maharaj never wanted any disciples. So what happens is the gurus who are there and willing to teach the masses, Swami Vivekananda, Gurudev. See, Raman Maharshi, he didn't want to teach. He didn't come out and say, oh, come on, let me tell you. No, he just sat there. If anybody wanted, you go to him. Nisargadat Maharaj is the same way. He never came out of his hut. He stayed in the slums. People saw, it's, you know, how when the flower blossoms, the fragrance go, you know, spreads. Like that, when this Mahatma is there, and if that Mahatma is living in the city or wherever, at least within boundaries where people can go, the fragrance will spread. The word will spread and people get attracted to such people. Those who have a very peaceful disposition, people get attracted to them. That is sattva, sattvic. Sattvic when people become more and more. Now, so point is that there are people who have realized, but they really don't want to be a guru. And that you come to know from that, from the records of that diary of Gurudev. And Gurudev met a few. God knows how many more were there, were never even. One story our Acharya, I remember, told us. There was a spiritual lecture going on. And then this beggarly-like man used to come and sit in the last row every day. One day, the speaker got stuck on a point. Some Vedantic point. He got stuck. He didn't know what to say. This gentleman from the back, he stood up and he just told her. So everybody looked at him, you know, and they realized that he's a realized master. But before they could go, he just disappeared. And he never came back again. So that's why what happens is a guru who is willing to give you the knowledge becomes very rare. Because first of all, and therefore he says, yatatam api siddhanam. Another reason is that among these thousands of men, only hundreds want to know me. They aspire to know me. And among the hundreds, only one will realize. So actually the gurus themselves are very few. Considering the masses of people that are there, the billions of people that are there, we think which is a great population, which is not. So human population is only 2%. Okay, fine. Now, among these masses, how many people will even, they even haven't heard Upanishad? The word, I'm telling you, now I've got new Balvihar parents. They have no clue what Vedas is. They have no clue what Upanishad is. They've not even heard. Right? So there are so many people who have not even heard. So where they will go to learn the knowledge? Right? When I look back into my childhood, I don't know whether I really had heard the word Upanishad. Gita I knew. Bhagavad Gita I knew. But Upanishad, I'm not sure. I can't recall in my childhood that. Bhagavad Gita, yes. Definitely, I knew. So there is a lot of people who don't. And then some among them are very fortunate to meet a guru. Then they will want to know. But, you know, it's like walking on the razor's edge. It's extremely difficult. So people don't stay on the path. So that's why Bhagwan says that kashchin mam veti tattvataha in essence. Tattvataha means in my essence. See, if you ask, especially in India, if you go, do you know God? Of course I know God. What do you mean? I've come and look at my altar, which is so big. There's Krishna is there and there's Rama and this is... That's why he says tattvataha. In essence, do they know me? They don't. They think God is over there and I'm over here. And what is God meant for? He's the means to get my goal. So they're praying very ardently. That is not tattvataha. That is not knowing his tattva. That is not knowing his, you know, his oneness with the entire world, his oneness with me. So that part becomes very rare. People who are striving to know that essence becomes extremely rare. There are very few people like that. And therefore, he says, now that you want to know all this, you are very special. So we should all consider, not from the ego point of view, but we must consider ourselves to be special, that we have this desire to know something. We are very lucky that we got a human birth. We are very lucky that we met Gurudev. So this is what Bhagwan is telling him. Manushanam sahasreshu kaschidyatati siddhe. This siddhi here means a purification of mind. Siddhi doesn't mean walking on water and, you know, doing all kinds of miracles. That is not the meaning of siddhi over here. There are very few people. Human birth is rare, and among the rare humans, very few people try to attain siddhi, which is purification of mind in this verse. This means purification of mind. And why do I need the purification of mind? To know the self. And so there are even very few people who want to know me in a sense. And among those few, only one may come to know me. And that's why the guru also becomes extremely rare. And then, okay, so then maybe some few people realize, out of that, more than half don't even want to talk to anybody. Now they're going into mount silence for 10 years. What do you do? Go stay in the cave, go stay in the Himalayas. Then it's very difficult to access them. And that's why guru becomes extremely rare. Okay, this is what he's saying. Now he starts with his knowledge. So it starts with the knowledge of the creation.
Bhumirapo nalo vayuhu khammano buddhirevacha ahankara iti yamme bhinna prakriti rashtada.
Earth, water, fire, air, ether, mind, intellect, egoism, thus is my eightfold prakriti. See, in the first verse, he said samagram, right? Complete. And what is complete? We said the lower aspect, his immanent aspect, and his transcendental aspect. So what he's talking about in verse 4 is immanent. What is seen? So what do we see here? The five elements. We have studied this in Tattva Bodh. This is the phenomena of creation. How is creation happening? Okay. We learned in Tattva Bodh. We learned in Tattva Vivek, if you have done it. All first came space. First, let's go behind. So pure consciousness is one without a second. Nothing. There's no creation, no nothing, right? Happily. Maya, when this pure Maya is invoked in this pure consciousness, what is Maya? It is the inherent power of the Lord. Okay, inherent. So it is within. I've given you the example. I have eyes and then I have the power of seeing. These are two different things. Eyes, people can see, but the power of seeing, people cannot see. Only I know. Only I know that I cannot see without glasses. People cannot tell. Just looking at me, if I'm not wearing glasses, they can't tell that I can't see. Read without glasses. I can tell. So my power, it is my power. That way this Maya is Bhagwan's power. When this power is invoked, like in an individual, when do I invoke my power? When I choose to look at the screen, I've invoked my power of seeing. You have now invoked your power of listening because you want to listen to me. So when this power is invoked by the Lord, question is, when does he invoke this power? So we'll come to that question. Hold on to that question. But before that, when he invokes this power, he's then known as Ishvara. Like when I invoke my power of seeing, or now I've invoked my power of speaking and I'm speaking. Now in this chair, in this moment, I am a speaker. You are a listener. So when you've invoked that power, you have become, if I invoke my power to cook, then I become a cook for that time. Okay. Same way when the pure consciousness, when Maya is invoked, and we'll see when and how Maya gets invoked. When Maya is invoked, now he is Ishvara. And this Ishvara is the one who creates, because pure consciousness cannot lose its position as the non-doer. So pure consciousness does not create. There is no creation through or by pure consciousness. Okay. But Ishvara can create, because Ishvara has this power of Maya. And Maya is Trigunatmak. It has sattva, rajas, and tamas in it. Okay. So from this Maya, Shakti, Ishvara, in our ordinary life, when does an action happen? Before an action happens, what has to come in the mind? Thought. Right? Right? A desire or a thought. I want to have a cup of tea. Oh, I feel like drinking water. Then what will happen is, then I will pick up the glass of water and drink it. So Ishvara, first the thought came to him, I shall create. So when that thought comes, same like when I invoke my power of speech, I become a speaker. So when I invoke my thought, I become a thinker. And that thought, once the thought came into Ishvara's mind, then he is called as Hiranyagarbha. Are you getting this? Hiranya Gold, Garbha womb. Because the thought is the womb of action. Unless it's a madman, he's just doing actions for no reason. But generally people have a thought, okay, I want to buy some groceries, so now I better get into my car and go to the grocery store. So the thought is there, the desire is there. So when this thought is invoked, then Bhagwan is known as Hiranyagarbha. This is at the total level, okay? So the total creator is Ishvara. And then the mind, total mind is called as Hiranyagarbha. In this mind, in this Hiranyagarbha, Ishvara has the memory of all the previous creations, all the karmas of the jivas. Ishvara is all powerful. Please remember, Ishvara is all powerful. So he has the memory. As per that memory of creation, he then creates. But to create, suppose I have a thought that I want to drink water. Don't I need my hand? Don't I need my body? Because I need to pick up the glass and I need a body to put that water in my mouth, right? So in Hiranyagarbha, when this thought is there, in Ishvara, when the thought is provoked that let me create, Hiranyagarbha is at the mental level. In your Gurudev's BMI chart, this is the total chart that I'm telling you. So there is pure consciousness, Om, at the top. And then there is the Vasas, the V, which is the Hiranyagarbha. Pure consciousness plus Maya equals Ishvara. Ishvara, when has the thought, becomes Hiranyagarbha. So that's mind and intellect. Okay. And then when the thought comes, he needs Virat. He needs a body. Because to actually create, then he needs a body. To actually do an action, we need a body. Just the thought, I want to drink tea. Tea is not going to get produced. I will have to get up, use my body, and then make the cup of tea. So that's for, there is Ishvara, there is Hiranyagarbha, and then there is the Virat. Okay. Now, all these three have come from Maya, which is Trigunatmak. So all, whatever comes from Maya has got these three gunas, sattva, rajas, and tamas. And the first thing that got created was space, because to hold anything, space is required. So these elements, bhinna prakruti ashtadha. So when he says prakruti, bhinna, when he says bhinna, each one separate means these five elements first were in subtle form, in nascent form. They were the tanmatras. They were called as tanmatras. And they were pure. There's pure space, pure air. Means no admixture of any of the other elements. Space, only space. No air, no fire, no water in it. Only air, no space, no water, no fire. Only water, only fire, and then only earth. That's the meaning of that word bhinna. And it says bhinna means different, different. Means when they were first created, these five elements, they were all different, different, different in subtle form. And from this subtle elements comes our subtle mind. Because from subtle can come only subtle. Right? So our mind is therefore very subtle. I've told you, our mind only I can see, nobody else can see. And therefore that which cannot be seen by the senses is called as subtle. So from the subtle elements comes the subtle mind. And if you remember your Tattva Bodh, from the subtle part of all the elements comes the Gnanendriyas and the mind. From the Rajasic part of all the elements comes the Karmendriyas, the organs of action, and the Pranas, because they are Rajasic. And then from the Tamasic aspect, of these elements, they undergo this Panchikarana, the grossification, which is now the mixture. It is becoming impure. Now space divides and other four elements get mixed up. Air divides. All the elements now, which are very in pure, pure, nascent form, they divide halfway and each one gets mixed with the other. And that is what is known as grossification. And from the grossified elements come the gross body. This is how creation happens. Why do I need the gross body? Because to fulfill the thoughts in the mind, the desires, I need a body. How I will fulfill my thoughts, desires. So body is needed. Mind is needed, because if there's body and no mind, then there will be no desire. Therefore, the mind comes first. Thoughts came first in Ishwara. First, Ishwara was born when Maya Devi was, Maya Shakti was invoked in pure consciousness. Ishwara had a thought. He became Hiranyagarbha. At the total mind level is Hiranyagarbha, where this entire creation, memory of entire previous creations was there. Depending on that, see, when I do any action, if I make a cup of tea, what I go into is my memory bank. What do I need to do? I need to put water, boil the water, put some tea leaves, put some milk, put some sugar, and now tea is ready, right? So every time I'm going into my memory banks to do something, most of the things we don't even know. We just like drinking water and stuff. We just go to the tap, open the tap, we'll do it. But if there is some recipe complicated, I will go into my memory banks, or I'll say, oh, this is written here, right? So that same way, this Hiranyagarbha goes into its memory banks, which has got all the previous creations in mind. And as per that, a new creation is created. Now, we also saw in Tattva Vivek, first, at the individual level, Ishwara is Prajna. Prajna in our individual chart is Vasanas, we. Because all the blueprint of whatever is in our body and mind is in there, in very subtle form, which even we don't know. That's why we don't know what our vasanas are. So Ishwara is Prajna at the individual level. Hiranyagarbha is Taijasa at the mental level, which is the mind intellect stuff. And then Virat is Vishwa or Vaishwanara at the individual level. Okay, so there is the creator. So in our individual self, we can say that the vasanas are the creator of the thoughts, and thoughts are the creator of actions. You can say it like that. Though the ultimate creator is Ishwara of everybody, okay? But individually, where is this action originating from? If you think, it is originating from thought. And where is the thought originating from? It is originating from vasanas. Okay? So all this is, what is the material that has gone into making of this? He says, these are the five materials. And then he says, mind, intellect, and ahankar. Now here, this mind, intellect, and ahankar must be understood as mind being the material cause. Manaha, which is said here, which is to be taken as the material cause, which is the total ego. it's a little bit complicated, because here we think, oh, mind and intellect and ego, they should not be understood as the parts of the mind. In our mind, we have these four parts, na? Mind, intellect, ego, and memory, chitta. So it should not be understood like that. So the mind is the material cause, which is the total ego. Total ego is actually Virat, the body. Okay. Then intellect is the mind. Mind means at the mental level, which is Hiranyagarbha. And ego is Avyakta, which is Ishvara. So that is how it goes. So there are the five elements. Okay. And then there is Ishvara, there is Hiranyagarbha, and there is Virat. This is how this creation has come about, the world. And why has the world been created? Is because without the world, how will we fulfill our vasanas? See, I have a thought. I want to drink tea. Now there is no tea leaves created in the world. How will you drink tea? So the objects have to be there for this thing. Now, is this clear? Are there any questions in this? Everybody clear with about this? Now the question we can go back to is, why is even Maya invoked? Why is Ishvara not just stay in your non-doer position and don't create this world and don't create us, and there'll be no sorrows and there'll be no nothing, right? That's why so many people ask, why did God create this world? Because this world, if you're saying, is full of sorrows, is Dukkhamaya. Why did even God bother to create? See, the point is that what they say is there are these three gunas, sattva, rajas, and tamas. When they are in perfect equilibrium, okay, so they're all equal, they're equal, no creation can happen. The most common example is our deep sleep. In deep sleep, everything is folded. So see, no thoughts come. Then no thought come, then no action also comes when a person is in deep sleep. So everything is in equilibrium. When we wake up, when do we wake up? When this equilibrium gets disturbed, individual, daily waking up, I'm telling you, any day in the morning, see, know that you even wake up without an alarm. Don't think that the alarm woke you up. People wake up without alarm. People wake up before the alarm. Some people sleep through the alarm. They don't even hear the alarm. They'll wake up afterwards also, right? So alarm is, we think that, oh yeah, alarm is there. That is what woke me up. No. What woke me up is the stirring of these gunas. They start stirring when they have the need to get fulfilled. When they mature, they start stirring within us. And that is what actually wakes us up. And therefore they say that if a person's vasanas are all fulfilled, the person never wakes up. In the middle of the night, he will go. The best way to go. But that's what it is. So when these vasanas stir up, we wake up. Now, going back to the creation, in Ishvara, this in pure consciousness, this inherent power of Maya is there, lying dormant. Why do we say dormant? In perfect equilibrium, there's complete peace. There is no agitation. There is no thought. There is no nothing. This thing. But what happens is, in the previous creation, all these jivas were there and all their vasanas, they went into pralaya, right? They got destroyed. In the sense, they merged back into the pure consciousness. Those total vasanas of those total jivas start stirring. They start stirring. So when they start stirring, why do they start stirring? Because now they matured. They're matured. So they start stirring and they disturb this equilibrium, which is in pure consciousness. This gets now disturbed because that three gunas, which were in perfect balance in equilibrium, they now, there is now vibrations in them. When those vibrations happen, Ishvara is created. So God actually has not created the world. Who has created the world is the jivas. I have created the world because I have accumulated so many vasanas that I am going to have to take now a new birth in a new situation to accumulate all those new vasanas that I created while functioning in this world today. So I become the creator of my own world, and God has not done anything. God is at peace. Electricity is at peace. There's nothing wrong. Now I go and I'll plug my computer in there, plug my phone in there, plug my, you know, this thing, that thing. Now, you know, all these light is coming, sound is coming from the radio, fridge is cold, heater is hot. All this is happening because I went and plugged into electricity. Was quiet. It was electricity. Come, please plug something into me. No, electricity is fine. Pure consciousness is fine on its own. Except these vasanas, which now start stirring, they become the cause of creation. So that is when this Maya Shakti gets invoked. It's actually not even invoked because pure consciousness doesn't, it gets disturbed. And the disturbance is not coming from pure consciousness, it's just coming from all these vasanas which were lying dormant for so many years. In pralaya also, there's many, many years. They lie dormant, then now they've woken up. Like we lie dormant for 8 hours at night and then the vasana starts stirring. That's why we wake up. We never wake up because of alarm clock. Otherwise, nobody would have slept through an alarm. Nobody would have woken up before the alarm. So many people wake up before the alarm. They put the alarm, wake up, right? So that is what it is. So here, therefore, he says that there are these five elements. First, in a very nascent state, which is very pure state, a subtle state. And so they're very individual, very pure, without any admixture of anything. And this mind, buddhi, and ahankar. So mind being Ishvara, that is the meaning of this. So first, pure consciousness plus Maya is Ishvara. Ishvara is invoking the memory. So mind, he needs mind. So Hiranyagarbha. And then Hiranyagarbha, whatever is in the mind to bring it into action, bring it into manifestation, a body is needed. And therefore the Virat. So the jivas themselves, what we do, we as jivas, what we are doing is, we are doing these hordes of actions. Why? Because already there are desires in our mind, right? Without desire, desire precedes action. Without a desire, a thought coming into the mind, nobody would act. No matter what action I do, in my thought, there is that one thought is there. Okay? With this, we are doing all these karmas. Now, these karmas, there's a thought and then the karma I'm doing to fulfill that thought, that vasana gets exhausted. Okay? But while doing the karma, I do it in a wrong way. That's our problem. That's where our knowledge has to come in. So what I'm doing is, you know, I do this karma and then one desire is fulfilled. Immediately before even that desire is like fulfillment has come to an end, I start thinking of when it will come again. When will the next party be? When will the next... Classic example is you go for one movie and you're happy. Then you see the preview. Oh my God, I have to see this movie now. Classic is it happens to me too. I see the preview. I don't even know that. That one I have to see. This is what we are doing. The jivas are doing. And because of that, we are exhausting, but at the same time, we are accumulating also. And not all accumulated vasanas can be fulfilled in this life because there are so many. The life is not enough. The situation is not enough for the jiva. So what then the jiva, what happens to these karmas? In subtle form, they get accumulated. Then in this yuga, before pralaya also, the body falls. And then whatever now is stirring up will get us a new body, a new situation, a new family, a new whatever surroundings to fulfill those vasanas. And again, while fulfilling, we're going through the cycle of birth and death. And therefore, that's where Bhagwan comes in and says that, yes, you have the very fact that you have taken birth is indicating that there is a set of desires. Otherwise, birth would not have happened only. You would have been very happy. No body only, no birth only, right? But birth has happened. Even for, I mean, Gurudev was born, right? So there was a set of desires. It just straight birth indicates a set of desires that are there. A set of vasanas that are there. Okay, we understand that. So Bhagwan says, there are there, right? You exhaust them because there is no other way. Vasanas, two only ways of exhaust, the prarabdha karma, only one way is exhausting. See, there is Sanchita and Agami. Sanchita and Agami, remember, it will go in knowledge. Immediately they get burnt because of knowledge. But prarabdha karma does not get burnt. The only way is to exhaust it. Okay? So while you're exhausting, the idea is don't create new ones. And how do I not create new ones? Is when a situation comes to me, I remain neutral. That is what that Maya Sakta Manaha. That's where it'll get fulfilled. So good situation comes to me. I'm like, okay. Now when is the next lottery I'm going to win? When is the next movie? When is the next party that I'll go? When is the next, when am I going to wear this new sari? All these things must not come. That good, so you enjoy it. Vedanta also doesn't tell you don't enjoy. Dispassion doesn't mean, okay, you just go there, you just wear a white sari, every in the colorful, you sit in a corner, you don't talk to it. Not like that. You go enjoy. But don't breed more thoughts for the future. You enjoy it at that moment. The minute you leave that party, drop it. Enjoy, drop. Suffer, drop. Because not every time there'll be a party. There will be bad situations. You suffer that in that moment. You do whatever is to be done. You go, you take your medication, you go to the doctor, do whatever is to be done. But don't say, why me? Why me means you won't be, reason is you only did those type of karmas, therefore now you got this. So there's nobody to blame. There's no God to blame. There's nobody else to blame. Okay. So you suffer it silently. You say, okay, that, and that's where you bring God in. Okay, God, you gave me this. Now you give me the strength. You give me the thoughts, correct thoughts, guidance. What should I do? So that way, when you surrender, you will not create new asanas. So that's the only way of ending your this thing. You cannot do anything for the entire world because billions of people will have even more thoughts, right? So this is how creation happens. Okay? Clear? And this is the... So now what Bhagwan is saying is, Ankar itiyam me. Me here is mine. Thus is my eightfold. See that M is in capital. So because now I've explained all this, now what is this connection to Bhagwan? Please understand that Lord Krishna is talking from the absolute standpoint. He's not talking as Krishna. He's talking from the pure consciousness standpoint. So he says, they are mine. That's why what he said, my complete knowledge. So this is my image. So understand that these five elements, they are me only. This is what Bhagwan is. So this is my lower nature. Okay, that me is very, my father has underlined it in red. If you can see, this is my father's, you know, red. He has underlined that may word in red. It's his book, my dad's. So may. So that's why it's very important. Mine, they are mine. Understand. It's not different. Because how this is going to proceed is, they are mine and what you are inside is me. So everything is one. Okay. So therefore that may word is very important. We must not forget. It's not a bakri ka meh. It's not like, it's mine. So he says this, all this prakriti is mine. So this is my lower nature. Because you see all these varieties, differences you see, right? But don't get confused. Don't get confused. It's me only. Now, next, we'll read this and we'll talk about it and we'll talk more next time.
Apareyamitastvanyam prakrutim vidhime param jiva bhutam mahabaho yayedam dharyate jagata.
This is the inferior prakriti, different from it. So this means he's now referring to the previous verse 4. This is the inferior. So what he talked about in the previous verse. And different from it, know thou, mighty armed, my higher prakriti. Okay, so in verse 4, what you heard was my lower prakriti. And this, my higher prakriti, is different from it, the very life element by which this world is upheld. So when we use the word different, what should come to our mind is that whatever is the nature of this world, right? It was the creation of the world that was explained. So whatever is the nature of the creation of this world, if something has to be different from that, we know the world. So the attributes, the qualities should be different, right? If there's, okay. So how is the world? The world is first inert. Everybody agrees? Yad drishyam tad jadam. Whatever I see is inert, is jada. Okay, so if he says that my higher prakriti is different from this, then if the world is jada, inert, then how the higher prakriti should be? Sentient. Because if higher prakriti is also inert and lower prakriti is inert, what is the difference? So if this is, and the thing is, we don't know the higher prakriti, right? We are seeing the world. What we have to go from known to unknown. So when we look at this world, we may think that, oh no, but everybody's alive, neighbors are alive, I hear their sounds and all. But the all the matter is all inert only. And what I see, my neighbor, I'm only seeing inert matter. I don't see the consciousness in him. I only see matter, like this computer, anything. Of course, it's very easy to understand the book and the table and the glass and everything is inert. That is very easy to understand. What we have difficulty with is understanding how the other person is also inert. Because the other person is inert because what I am seeing is only the body of that person and the body is inert. So this world in its entirety is inert. The higher prakriti being different from this has to be sentient. Other thing about the world is it is false. It is mithya. It is experienced at one point in time, but it goes away at another point. Okay. The most common example is the three states that we go through. We are now in the waking state, which will disappear when I go to sleep. The waking state will be gone. And when I'm in deep sleep, the waking is not there and the dream is not there. And then from my deep sleep, I may go into a dream state where this deep sleep also will disappear. Waking will disappear and the dream state will appear real. During the dream state appears real only. So these are changing, and because they are changing, they're false. They're experienced at one, because the definition of real in Vedanta is that which doesn't change in the three periods of time. So if this waking state is going to end at 10 o'clock at night, and then there's going to be deep sleep, there's going to be dream, that means all three are false because they are negating each other. When waking is there, the other two are not there. When dream is there, the other two are not there. Deep sleep, the other two are not there. So each one is negating the other two, which means that none of them are true. They don't stand at this definition that they are there in all three periods of time. No, in the dream, deep sleep state, waking is there. So they're false. So if they are false and the higher nature is different, then what it has to be? It has to be real. Otherwise, how we can say, know this viddhi me par prakritim viddhi, and know it to be different. That was my lower prakriti. Verse 4 was my lower prakriti. Now understand my higher prakriti, which is different. How do I understand different? In me, I see the form and I say, okay, yeah, my nose is a different form, different function than my eyes. And this is how I understand differences. So between world and God, how do I understand? Is world is like this. So world is false. So God has to be, pure consciousness has to be real. His higher nature has to be real. Real means which does not change in the three periods of time. If we were to take our own example, if you go through the waking, dream and deep sleep states, there is some entity which is there in all the three states because of which I have memory of deep sleep. When I wake up, I knew nothing. I slept well. I don't need somebody else to tell me that you slept well, huh? Last night you were very fast asleep, right? So that is there. So that is not negated in the three periods of time. So if the world is getting negated at one or other period of time, that cannot be negated. That's how it is different. The third thing about the world is, it is dukkhamaya. It's actually sorrow. You know, we think it's very, very happy, but it is sorrow. So I'm going to leave it here for this thought for you guys to think as to how this world is complete sorrow. And we will continue next time. Are there any questions? We'll continue with this verse 5. Okay, so there is more. We'll talk about it a little bit more. Any questions? It's clear. Yeah, Rashmi, you have a question?
Yes, Chayaji, you explained very well the chart. But Chitabhask, reflected consciousness, where does it reflect on us? Like, can you explain a little bit, or it's out of the...
It's out of the book, but Chidabhas is in the individual, like, yeah, Chidabhas is the reflection of the pure consciousness in the individual mind.
Mind and intellect both.
Mind and intellect both, yeah. Subtle body, which is called. That is what Chidabhas is. Here, Chidabhas is not relevant because this is talking about the creation of the total jivas.
Okay. So it's in Man Buddhi and Ahankar.
Here, they are to be taken as Ishwara, Hiranyagarbha and Virat.
Okay, not micro. Okay, okay.
Because he's saying they are my lower nature, right? So they have to be interpreted as, That's why we need a teacher to tell us that,
Okay, got it.
Okay.
Thank you.
You're welcome. Any other questions?
Yeah, Ji, I have a question. Mm-hmm. You talked about Ishwara, Hiranyagarbha and Virat. And you said Ishwaran becomes Virat because Ishwara needs a body for creation.
Yeah.
And then you said, you compared Virat to total ego. So I did not really understand that part. How?
No. Ego means
the body.
Yeah. Ego has to be understood here as identification.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
Ego's definition. See, what we in general we think of ego is pride. If I say that I'm very rich, we think, oh, she's very egoistic. Okay. In Vedanta, it is not I'm very rich. Even if I say I'm very poor, that is also considered ego because it is my identification with my bank balance.
Mm-hmm.
How do I know I'm rich or poor? I identify with my investments and I say I'm very poor or I'm rich. So identification is what ego is. And that is what is meant. He needs to identify with the body. Means what? When I have, now that I'm speaking, I'm actually identifying with my vocal cords.
Right. Yeah.
You see? And that is ego. When I say that I have become a speaker, it is ego. Not like I'm a good speaker. Not like that pride. That is our common understanding. That in Vedanta, you must leave that aside. It is only identification. Therefore, when I say, oh, I'm not very beautiful, we say ego. In normal circumstances, we say that is very humility. Huh? She said, oh, you know, I don't have that much beauty. My sister is very, or my neighbor is very beautiful, right? And if somebody says, I'm very beautiful, then we say, how egoistic, huh? And we say, oh, she's so humble. You know, she said, nay, I have no. But in Vedanta, we'll call both ego.
Okay, so.
Very important point to be remembered.
When we learned about Virat Roop, we talked about each part of that Virat representing, the hairs on the Virat Roop representing trees.
Yes.
Just like that.
Correct. In Purusha Sukta.
We were referring to the gross elements. So Virat is actually referring to the gross bodies of everybody, no?
Correct. Okay. Therefore, Virat in the individual is Vishwa. Body. Okay. Vishwa. Mm-hmm. Yeah, correct. You're correct. That's right.
Okay. Thank you.
But
thank
the
you.
Way to understand it is when we understand, because individual becomes easy for us to understand. Think about it. Now, if you have a thought which is coming from, which is the thought is created because of the vasana. So because of Ishwara, that thought is in individual. Huh? Vasana, pradnya, thought is created in the mind. But the thought just doesn't give rise to action. Huh? For action, the body is required. See, the thought came to me that I should teach this class. But unless I start using my physical vocal cords, how I will teach? So at that point, I need identification with my vocal cords, with my throat, with my body, with my gross body. And then that's why called ego.
Okay. Yeah.
Because I'm identifying. It's just...
Okay, yeah.
Ego, that's why it becomes very tricky. Because in normal parlance, it's common, Is it not true? In my mind previously, if somebody says, I'm very, so egoistic, huh? And if somebody says, oh, you know, I'm not, kitna humble hai, so humble she's, huh? She's there. No. That's not that way it should be understood.
Okay, yeah. Okay. Thank you.
All right. Okay, we'll say our closing prayers and we'll meet next time, next Monday. Om Purnamadah Purnamidam Purnat Purnamudachyate Purnasya Purnamadaya Purnameva Avashishyate Om Shanti Shanti Shantihi Harihi Om Shri Gurubhyo Namaha Harihi Om. Okay, we'll see you next Monday. Hariyom.